The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 365. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, you ready for our third podcast of the week?
Let's do it. We're going all in on the outfielders this week for sure, and it's a fun group, so it's certainly worth three episodes between the prospects and the majors. So, yeah, I'm ready to dive in. We did, 1 through 20 in our most recent episode, and today we'll go a little deeper, but some interesting names nonetheless.
Yeah, you have to do more than just two episodes of this position. I mean, we probably could have even stretched the outfield prospects into two. I mean, we're definitely doing at least three episodes total for pitcher, yep. You know, at least one prospect, two dynasty. Maybe we stretch that second, the prospects out to two as well. We'll see. Don't want to do like oversaturated though. That's kind of the balance you got to try to find, but at least three again next week, you know. Getting ready for, you know, off-season dynasty drafts, FYPD drafts. Clegg and I are both in a dynasty auction. Like we mentioned last time, we've been kind of in a little bidding war for first baseman right now with each other. So, been a fun week. A lot of we just got off RotoWire podcast with James Anderson and Chris Welsh. There's a lot of fun stuff this week. But before we get into the rest of our dynasty outfield rankings here, we'll knock out the housekeeping real quick. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg MILB. I'm at Eric Ross MLB, and the show's at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydigo.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And check out all the great content over on Rotoballer. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get your 10% off any premium package. All right, so let's go right into the rankings here. So we did top 20 already in last episode of 364 came on Wednesday, so if you missed that, go back and check that out. Took a lot of fun players there. It's a loaded position. And now we go 21 through 50. I mean, we could even do more episodes than this, but 21 through 50. So we'll start, we'll break it down, 21 through 35, and then 36 through 50. A couple of 15 player blocks there. So, Clegg, who you got at 21 through 35?
All right. Here we go, long list, but Brent Rooker at 21, I acknowledge he's UT most places, so I know people will jump on that off the gate, but Brent Rooker, Jason Dominguez, Dylan Cruz, Lawrence Butler, Luis Robert Jr., 26 through 30, Sia Suzuki, Teoscar Hernandez, Christian Yelich, Anthony Santander, and Emmanuel Rodriguez at 30, and then 31 through 35 is Walker Jenkins, Cody Bellinger, Brenton Doyle, Ian Happ, and Spencer Steer. I don't even know if he still has outfield eligibility looking at it.
I think he does.
Okay.
Does he?
Yeah, you have him on here, so I feel better about that.
Yeah, I do have him on here. Okay, so I think he played. Maybe he loses it this year, but we shall see. So I also had Brent Rooker, 21, so we're supposed to start with Brent Rooker, Sia Suzuki, Jason Dominguez, Christian Campbell, and Mike Trout at 25, who's, I have no clue where to frick the rank Mike Trout anymore, but right now I have him at 25. I don't know. Dylan Cruz, Spencer Steer, Kyle Schwarber, another possible UT-only guy in some leagues, but threw him on here. 28, 29-30, Brian Reynolds and Brenton Doyle. 31-35, Anthony Santander, Randy Arozarena, Walker Jenkins, Christian Yelich, and Cody Bellinger. So battle of the former MVPs there at the back half, or back two spots of these rankings for me. But let's start right at number 21 at Brenton Rooker. We both have at 21. And another big breakout from the Oakland Athletics. I mean, we talked Lawrence Butler last episode. We talked Luis Robert last episode. So, again, check that out if you missed it. Some good conversation on those two. But Brent Rooker, you know, after, you know, a solid 30-homer year back in 2023, Rooker just fully broke out this past year. Again, him and, as I mentioned last episode, him and Butler were, you know, when they were both, like, really hot in, like, July and then first half of August, they were right up there with, like, Soto and Judge in terms of how much production they had. But in 614 plate appearances total for Rooker this year, 293, 365, 562 slash line, 39 home runs and 11 steals. I mean, I never thought that I'd see Brent Rooker hitting 293, and that's probably on the high end of what you're going to see from him going forward. Probably drops down a good 20, 30 points. But, you know, outside of that, outside of some batting average regression, I'm buying, you know, kind of similar to what I said about Butler. I'm mostly buying what we saw from Rooker. I mean, and, you know, the Athletics are investing in him. They sent him to that extension, which I think was a good move for them in general. But some of the best power in all of baseball right now, you know, 16.6% barrel rate, hard hit rate right around 50%. You know, ex-Wobicon was 510, which is just a stupidly elite mark, you know, in the top 1% of hitters there. We had the contact skills. They did improve zone and overall improved around 4-5%. You know, a little bit higher K rate. So, again, probably drops down to 260, 270. But yeah, I think another 40 home runs in the cards. The lineup's getting a little bit better. So, a decent amount of RBI as well. Solid runs. You know, I don't know how much he runs moving forward. But a really good three-category guy. And, you know, an average that won't kill you. So, I think this is a top 50-ish guy for me right now. And, yeah, I'm definitely buying. You know, what about you, Clegg?
Yeah, I mean, he should be sustainable. Like, you look at what Rooker's done, and he's consistently gotten better. And I know late career breakouts, you know, may be concerning in a one-year sample, but now we're looking at a really good two-year sample. Also, the fact that Rooker is moving to a better park to hit in Sacramento. I understand that Sacramento, compared to AAA standards, isn't like an elite hitter's park like the rest of the PCL, but it is a boost from the Coliseum. Like, it will be a better play for Brent Rooker, who, honestly, how much do park factors affect him? Not a lot, but he's going to hit some fly balls to get out of there, just being honest. Like, that's the kind of power he has. It's legit power. Now, you look at the contact rates, and it's like, eh, like, is that sustainable? Are we going to see major regression? Because he ran a 66% contact rate last year. That's really bad. Rooker's end zone rate was a little bit higher at 79%. And that's notable because it was a big improvement on previous seasons. So in 2023, Rooker had a 73% end zone contact rate, jumping to 79. Now, that's really noticeable. It came with more aggression, actually. You look at the profile and what Rooker did, like, he was more aggressive and he chased more. But being more aggressive on first pitches really paid off in a big way for him. I think you know what you're getting with Rooker, and I think you have to feel pretty safe with it. Is he going to hit 293 again? Probably not. But is he going to hit 30-plus home runs again? Absolutely. And I think the batting average floor is probably higher than people give him credit for just looking at the contact rates. I think you're looking at a 250 hitter that gets you 35 home runs pretty easily. So, yeah, I am actually buying Brent Rooker. You know, am I going out and trading for him at this cost? Maybe not. But in a startup or if you roster him, you got to feel really good about what you have with Brent Rooker.
Yeah, especially if you already had him. I mean, his values went up 10 times over the last last year or so. And unfortunately, I did not have any Brent Rooker before this. I do have one share now. I got it fairly early in this breakout season of his. But yeah, I think he's going to be one of the best power bats in the game. And you know, could be even go over 40 home runs this year at that ballpark for sure. I mean, maybe he leads the, I mean, okay, Aaron Judge is in the American League, but maybe he is the, you know, highest home run total in the AL not named Aaron Judge, which is definitely a possibility as well. Let's see, did he finish? I mean, who else besides Aaron Judge in the AL had more home runs than Rooker? I'm looking up really quick here. I think he might have actually been second. Oh no, Santander had 44, Soto 41. But then, so he was tied with Joe Ram at fourth in the AL with those 39. I forgot Santander hit 44.
Such an interesting group up there of home run leaders last year.
I know. I mean, like you know, we didn't have him on the outline, but real quick, like, what about like Anthony Santander? He was another breakout. Good before this, but 44 home runs, 102 RBI, 235, 308, 506 slash line. I mean, he's still out there waiting to be signed. Real quick, how into Santander are you?
Do I think he hits 40 home runs again? Absolutely not. Like, I don't believe that for a second, but do I think he's a 30 home run bat? Yeah, I mean, because 33 home runs in 2022, 28 in 2023, and then obviously the big outbreak last year with 44. So that's not going to sustain, but 30 home runs absolutely is. Santander's interesting. Like, he's not going to light up the Statcast page, but that's okay because he barrels the ball up because of his launch angles. I'll be curious where he lands. I have no clue. I'm actually a bit shocked that he hasn't signed at this point. I do think it's coming in the next week or so. So I'll be curious to see how that shakes out. I actually think that Santander might be a decent buy because his hype hasn't really been driven by the performance. Like,
no.
Any other player that does that, 44 homers, I mean, look at Rooker and what he did. Like, we've pushed him high, but, you know, I mean, Santander's, I think his perceived value is much lower, so he may be a better buying opportunity.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And well, he really did a lot of that damage the last two-thirds of the year. He had 9 home runs entering June and then went to bonkers, 13, 9, 8, the next 3 months, and then 5 in September. I think the average cratered. He hit 198 in August, 222 in September. So that really cratered the average a little bit. But, yeah, could he be, you know, like, look at what he was before that. You know, kind of like 240, 250-ish, 30, you know, around 30 home runs. He's above average power. He had platoon issues either. He had a slug around 500, give or take a little bit, against both righties and lefties. Obviously, he's a switch hitter. I don't like him as much as a Rooker, but you know, I think he's a solid value right now. I agree. I don't think the perceived value has risen as high on him as some of these other kind of bigger breakouts we saw in 2024. But now we shift our focus over to Mr. Mike Trout, the pride of Millville, New Jersey. I mean, I don't, again, this even looking at my ranking of Trout right now, it feels high. It also feels low. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know where I want to rank Mike Trout. Obviously, he's one of the best players in the history of baseball, but also has been limited to under 500 plate appearances each of the last 3 years. I mean, he had 499. In 2022, and then 362 and 126. Actually, last time he was over 500 plate appearances was 2019. That was 6 years ago now for some quick math out there. And obviously, we had the shortened 2020 year, which he actually played all but 7 games out of the 60 that year and had a phenomenal year. But when he's on the field, he's still hitting for a ton of power. And even last year, 10 home runs in 29 games. 18 home runs in 82 games year before that. But the problem is, last 2 years combined, that's 111 games. Yeah, it's 28 home runs, but can we count on him to even be a top 100 guy anymore, Chris? Like, if you were contending, would you maybe still try to be looking to target a Mike Trout? I mean, he's so hard to value and rank right now.
I have absolutely no clue what to do with one Mike Trout here in a dynasty league because, as you said, it's kind of wild just looking at, how his career has progressed. Like, and I think that he's a no doubt Hall of Famer, but sadly, he was trending towards potentially one of the best ever before injuries really started to set in. And since the COVID year, it's just, he hasn't been on the field at all. I mean, since 2021, we're looking at an average of less than 300 plate appearances a season. And that's an issue. You got to be on the field to produce. And that's the one thing Trout does not have is availability. His profile's also evolved in an interesting manner in this process where, he's ultimately seen the average trend downward, but the contact rates have also gone the wrong way. Now, they improved in 2024. They jumped back to where he has been historically, but it was also such a small sample. But you look at the 3 years prior, and it was a downward trend on the contact rates, which is, not the Mike Trout we've known. Power's still off the charts. He still barrels the ball at elite rates when He does connect. It's just he's not on the field very often. Like, if I'm projecting plate appearances for Trout, like, I look at all the projection models right now, and they all have him north of 550 plate appearances. I can't project more than 300 for Mike Trout and right. feel okay about it. And that means that there's not production for your team. So here's the thing you could do. If you can get Mike Trout cheap enough and you know that the replacement level that you have with him is fairly high in the outfield, then it might be worth it. Because if Trout does by chance give you 450 plate appearances, they're going to be really good. I think that that's kind of one thing we can be confident in, that when he's on the field, he's going to be good. So, yeah, Trout's weird. He's tough to value. He turns 34 this season. Man, he's super tough.
Yeah, it's going to, obviously it sucks, but it's kind of weird how his career's gone with these injuries, because you know, early in his career, he was really durable. He had 4 years in a row from 2013 to 2016 with 157 or more games played. So he only missed over a four-year stretch. He missed 16 games, so average on 158 a year. And then 2017 through 2019, I mean, it wasn't quite that, but it wasn't, you know, terrible. It was 114, 140, 134, and then production was still elite. You know, he still had, like, OPSs over 1,000, for example. So it's like, all right, you're like, all right, this is a little annoying. He's missed a little bit of time, but you're still getting elite production out of him, and 130 out of Mike Trout is better than 160 out of most guys out there. So then after 2020, that's when it's just gone south for the winter, and I know he's 33 now. This, you know, the back. He's been told that he's going to have to deal with it for the rest of his life. So I don't have a lot of confidence. And it sucks because I hate to not see it. It's almost like the Ken Griffey Jr. thing, like a generational talent, you know, one of the best, you know, most talented players in the history of the game, just to be limited by injuries to the point where does he even get to 500 home runs at this point? I mean, he's only 122 away, but can he stay healthy to get there? I mean, he would have been a guy that would be 600 plus home runs and, you know, 300 plus steals and pushing 2,000 runs in RBI. That's the, you know, player he is, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, even in, I mean, obviously it's a price tag thing, as it is with every player, but if I got him for like a top 200 price tag, I'd be okay with it, I guess. I don't know. It's hard. Even though I still have him ranked where I do, which I think I'm going to actually get bumped down after looking at it here again, I don't think I'd be looking to trade for him unless I'm contending and can get him for, you know, well below market value, which probably is not going to happen. That's kind of the only way I'll probably end up with Mike Trout. I don't have him on any team right now, and don't really see that changing anytime soon. But another player here that I'm also pretty down on, always kind of have been, is Cody Bellinger. You know, obviously new team going to the Yankees. You know, some intrigue there, obviously. You know, with him being a lefty, short porch, and a guy that, you know, elevates and hits the ball in the air consistently. So a little bit of buzz again on Cody Bellinger, but there always seems to be. Chris, I hate how inconsistent Bellinger is. I mean, yeah, he's talented, and I never said he's not, but, you know, year to year, it's just so, you know, it's such a big fluctuation. I think I tweeted out, like, I think his OPS has swung at least, was it 110 or 120 points one way or another every year. It's like, even the last 3 years, 654 to 881 to 751. So you never know what you get from him. He's another guy that's kind of missing some time here. He's been kind of settled into like that 560-ish plate appearance range the last few years. Production's been solid enough, but I don't know. Are you in on Bellinger right now with the new team here?
So I think that Bellinger's kind of interesting in New York. I think he's more interesting now than he was. I'm not going to sit here and say that I think he's going to put up like, you know, best numbers he has in a while or anything of that nature. Because, like you said, it's wildly inconsistent for the most part with performance with Bellinger. You obviously have to say it's a big park upgrade given the short porch and right field for lefties, and Bellinger fits that mold. Like, you look at his spray chart last year of hits, and almost all of his home runs were to the poolside. I believe that Bellinger's going to hit 22 to 25 home runs this year. I really do, just given the fact that that park is going to be such a massive boost for his home run power. On the flip side, like, you also have him in a better lineup, in my opinion. So, you know, that I think that could be looked at as a positive in the light of that, you know, he doesn't have to be the guy. And even in Chicago, like, say he was the guy, but I think he may have been the highest paid player in the lineup. But now, like, you blend him in this lineup in New York, yeah, he's going to hit, what, fifth or sixth maybe? And so yeah, there's less pressure on him, I'd say. And I think there's the opportunity for him to perform. And I think that you can expect probably an uptick, I think, but we'll see. You don't know what you're going to get out of Bellinger year over year. Obviously, if you look at his Savant page, it's not good. But honestly, it's never really been good since his elite days back in the rookie years with the Dodgers. But what he does do is he squares up the balls well. Even though he lacks exit velocities, he is hitting the ball in the screws often. He sold some of that power for contact, and the contact stuck year over year, which is good. So I think Bellinger is interesting, and I think that he does have his place because he does provide a little power, he does provide a little speed, and I think the average is going to be respectable. So, you know, while not flashy, I think the return could be pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, and even if you get, similar amount of plate appearances out of him as you have the last few years, I think you can see him. He had 26 home runs back in 2023. I think you can see him bounce back to that. I don't know about 20 steals again, but if he's like 25, 10 to 15 steals, something like that, 80, so runs scored. I mean, it's still a valuable player. And, the fact that he loves getting to that pull side, and that's like a drastic pull rate, but, as you mentioned, all of his home runs, outside of a few that were to left center, were to that pull side, and, a few more, I'm sure a handful more would have gotten out in Yankee Stadium last year. So, yeah, I think, and I'm not going to be out there trading for him. I think the perceived value on him is always going to be higher than I'm willing to pay personally, but I definitely see the allure in, kind of buying Bellinger now, and I'm not opposed to it, in just a general, sense of things. Another intriguing player here, Brenton Doyle, it was another big breakout this past season. He went 10-22. He was a kind of popular, DC pick, best ball pick in, the 400-500 range of drafts last year. And anyone that got him, and I did him one, thankfully, really reaped the, benefits of that. 603 plate appearances, 260, 317, 446. Slash line, so it doesn't really stand out, but much better than what it was previous year. But finished with 82 runs, 23 home runs, 72 RBI, and 30 steals. I mean, and Chris, that power speed button's always kind of been there. It's always been a little bit intriguing in that regard. And he was above average, quality of contact last year. But, he's always been, a near elite runner. He had a 94th percentile sprint speed. But with Doyle, what's really been impressive, especially last year, was just improving as a hitter. I mean, zone contact jumped on about 6 to 6.5% up to 81% zone, and overall it's around 70% now. Again, still below average overall and slightly below average zone, but much better. I mean, again, about 6-7% jump in zone and a 6% jump in overall. That's really encouraging. Chase dropped a little bit, walk rate went up, K rate went down about 10% or 9.5%. So a lot of really encouraging things where he's probably still not more than the 250, 260 hitter, even in cores. But maybe we don't see another big step forward from him, but I think you could see, close to this production next year. I think, 20 plus, 25 plus in an average that is now respectable. Yeah, I think that's in the cards for Doyle. So maybe I'm not buying a jump from him, but I think he can just kind of stay where he is right now.
Yeah, Doyle's so fascinating to me because I was pretty out on him despite the power speed, but the contact jump was tangible. The weird thing is his splits are so drastic. And that's no surprise. I think you naturally think that, but here's his home slash versus the road slash and with BABIPs and K. 313, 365, 534. That's at home. So a 900 OPS at home. On the road, 211, 271, 364. That's a 636 OPS. The BABIP at home was 100 points higher, 365 to 264, and he struck out at a 7% higher clip on the road. The Coors effect is weird, man, and it certainly affected Brenton Doyle, but overall, you factor those together, and the end of the year result was still really good. You got 23 home runs, you got 30 stolen bases, you had a respectable average in OBP. The contact gains were real. You can't argue that, even if they're pretty drastic home and away. At the end of the year, the numbers were there. And that's what we play the game for. We play a full season. We're not just playing Rockies on the road, So I don't know. I struggle. I see a cliff here that Brenton Doyle could fall off. But given how good Doyle's glove is, he's going to be in the lineup every day. So that helps that you know he's not going to get benched. Nolan Jones, he could get benched pretty quick. Doyle's not going to get benched because his glove is so good. And that helps him. So I think that he's an interesting value for 2025 and beyond. He's 26 years old. He has the risk factors. He's got some red flags in the profile, but the power speed is legitimate. And yeah, I want to buy, but part of me thinks sell him if you roster, if he's currently on your roster, because did we just see the peak season from Brenton Doyle? It's highly possible we did.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say we saw peak Brenton Doyle, but even if he's like, you know, 80-90% of that, I think that's still a valuable player. That, you know, right in that kind of top 100, give or take range, you know, maybe a little bit inside, maybe a little bit outside. But yeah, I'm mostly buying into Doyle. I don't think there's gonna be any massive jump. But like you mentioned, the defense is so good in center field that that's gonna keep him in the lineup even through some struggles, and it did this past year as well. So yeah, I definitely like Brenton Doyle a bit here. All right, let's move on to the next set of our rankings here. Recap real quick, 21 through 35 for Chris was Brent Rooker, Jason Dominguez, Dylan Cruz, Lawrence Butler, Luis Robert, Cia Suzuki, Teoscar Hernandez, Christian Yelich. And speaking of another injury guy like Trout, you know, Yelich kind of fits that mold too. Anthony Santander, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Walker Jenkins, Cody Bellinger, Brenton Doyle, Ian Happ, Spencer Steer. For me, I got Rooker, Suzuki, Jason Dominguez, Christian Campbell, Mike Trout, Dylan Cruz, Spencer Steer, Kyle Schwarber, Brian Reynolds, Brenton Doyle, and then Santander, Rosarena, Jenkins, Yelich, and Bellinger at 35.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
So let's go 36 through 50 here. For me, that is Colton Cowser, Teoscar Hernandez, Tyler O'Neill, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Chase DeLauder. 41 through 45, Adelis Garcia, Heliot Ramos, Nick Castellanos, Kerry Carpenter, Willier Abreu. 46 through 50, Brendan Nimmo, Pete Crow Armstrong, Taylor Ward, Zidane Rafaela, and Parker Meadows at 50. Chris, who do you got 36 through 50?
Yeah, so Mike Trout, as we talked about at 36, probably pretty low on him in retrospect to most people, but Tyler O'Neill, Colton Cowser, Kerry Carpenter, and Max Clark. 41 through 45 is Zaire Hope, Josh Lowe, Evan Carter, Pete Crow Armstrong, Chase DeLauder, and then 46 through 50 is Stephen Kwan, Randy Arozarena, Willier Abreu, Nick Castellanos, and one Tommy Edman to round out the 50.
Tommy Edman. Nice little resurgent year from him with the Dodgers there. So We're not talking Edmund here, but we will talk a little Randy Arozarena, a guy that, you know, you see a pretty sizable difference in our rankings here. I have him 32. Chris has him 47. And that's, you know, that's valid. I think there's going to be a pretty wide range of rankings and thought processes around Arozarena heading into 2025. I mean, you saw there's still some good last year, but obviously the slash line cratered down to 219, 332, 388. But, you know, went 2020 for the third year in a row. Was it third year or fourth year in a row? Fourth year in a row with 2020. He's been very consistent in that regard. He's been on the stayed on the field, you know, never had a lot of time missed over the last 4 years, which is really nice to see there. So I guess my question with Arozarena right now, because you look at the underlying metrics, Chris, and there wasn't like any massive change. I mean, quality of contact went down a little bit, but still, you know, solid quality of contact, above average, I'd say, across the board. K rate went up a little bit, but nothing drastic. Contact rates, again, we're, you know, a little down. So maybe it's just like, you know, the encapsulation of all these things together made the drop off. But, you know, do we think that he was overperforming the metrics coming into this year, and this was kind of the correction to that? Or do you think it's a good buying opportunity that he could bounce back to, you know, have that slash line, the average and OBP bounce back a little bit here? So what are you thinking right now on Arozarena?
He's so tough. I mean, his fall off is hard to value and judge, honestly. I will say Arozarena in Seattle is bad, bad, bad. That's by far the worst park to hit in baseball. And it's not remotely close either. So for somebody that saw regression, I don't love him in T-Mobile at all, to be honest with you. I think that could affect him and continually kind of keep the numbers down. It's actually grades out okay for home runs for right-handed batters, but overall park factors just not great. And in my opinion, there's something weird like regarding the batter's eye, and it causes some struggles with hitters in a similar way that the Trop has also had complaints. And, you know, Arozarena was fine there, but yeah, I think it's interesting to look at the numbers. They weren't bad. I mean, Arozarena still hit the ball hard. He ran an average exit velocity north of 90 miles an hour, which is really good. But his barrel rate dropped pretty substantially from 12.3% to 8.3%. So, I mean, that's a pretty big dip in my opinion. It also came with a pretty big dip in sweet spot rate. And this is an area that he's always kind of struggled, is just very inconsistent launch angles. And that's exactly what we saw this year. So line drive rate was down, which that hurts the sweet spot rate. Most line, I think nearly all line drives would constitute in the sweet spot. So that was an effect. He hit the ball on the ground more and he hit more fly balls, but notably hit a lot more pop-ups. The pop-up rate is pretty high on Randy Arozarena. So I think that's something important to note with him. I don't know. It's a tough profile right now. I see reasons to still be in on him because despite the downward turn, as you mentioned, 2020 season again, he's done that consistently. He's been a picture of health for the most part. He's given you consistent plate appearances every year. He's going to hit 20 home runs and he's going to steal 20 bases. What kind of average does it come with? Well, I don't think it's going to be 219 again, but I think it might be 240, 245. Yeah. So I don't know. I think that depending on how he's valued in your league, like you could buy low on him. My ranking of him is fairly low. So, you know, maybe you can buy. I don't know. I've struggled with Arozarena this offseason, honestly, like figuring out what I think of him moving forward.
Yeah, me too. But again, I kind of go back to just that consistency with the 2020, even in a down year, a quote unquote bad year from him. Still in 2020, so give you a decent amount of runs, runs scored as well. So I think he does bounce back to a degree. I think it's kind of in the middle of kind of what I said to lead you in there. It was, you know, maybe he was a little bit overperforming the metrics, but again, there wasn't like any major, you know, concerns with, you know, like, oh, like, yeah, you don't get the barrel right, you know, did drop 4%, but it wasn't like the contact skills like went way down or anything like that. So I think he will positively regress to some regard. Maybe not back up to 263 again, but yeah, I think you said 240. I think that's fair. And I actually just pulled up real quick while you were talking. His home splits after the trade to Seattle in late July. He had 26 home games with Seattle, and as he was fine, 247, 381, 430, three home runs, two steals, 113 plate appearances. So kind of fine there, not terrible, but yeah, definitely not the greatest park to hit in for sure. All right, moving on here to Ian Happ, who I think is, he's one of my favorite, redraft, dynasty, doesn't really matter, both. I love Ian Happ. I've always been an Ian Happ guy. I liked him as a prospect coming up through, so many years ago now. It feels like forever ago. Ian Happ was a prospect, but he's not flashy by any means, but he's just really solid. Look at the last 2 years, 86 runs, 89 runs. He went 21-14, 25-13. Average has been kind of right in that 245, 250 range. He's 248 for his career. So not great, but not bad either. Solid OBP as well, 340 plus. Slug has been very consistent over the last few years. He's above average power guy, 45% hard hit, nearly a 12% barrel rate, which is back up to where it was earlier in his career after it kind of went down a little bit in 2022 and 2023. So, and he gives you a little bit of speed as well. He's always been, lower teens, at least 10 to 14 range for steals. So if you just get low to mid 20s home runs, 10 to 15 steals, 80 plus runs, an average in, that you can live with. He's super consistent. I love getting him as an outfield three. I think he's a good outfield three. Not a guy you want to lead your outfield, but your outfield three, maybe even get him as your outfield four, depending on your league depth. I love Ian Happ. Dude is so underrated.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about him. And he always floats in that similar ADP range year over year, it feels like, where it's not like you have to spend a big price tag on him. And I frankly don't know what his ADP is right now, but he's always kind of been like 140-ish, I think.
I'll pull it up while you're talking.
Yeah, I'd love to know where he is because I think the price is good. Happ's 30. He's gotten better year over year. And I think that given what we saw out of him, I think especially down the stretch last year where he got better and better, like Happ could be in for a really big year this year. And I look at the numbers and, he was pretty consistent batting average-wise, like month to month, but in August, he had a big, he was pretty consistent actually month to month. He hit five home runs in May, five in June, six in July, six in August, dropped down to two in September, October, but I just think Happ's going to be just a consistent producer. I think you can count on him and you feel safe with what you get out of him. He's going to provide OBP. Like, he's always been a really solid OBP play. The batting average is going to be solid. I think that you see the batting average tick back up. I think he's a 250-type hitter that gets on base at a 350 clip. And I certainly believe in the power. I believe that he's going to hit 20, 25 homers, and he's going to steal you 10 to 15 bases. While not flashy, it's good. The lineup, I think, with Tucker now has way more protection. I use the word protection lightly. Like, I don't love that term, but also think it benefits Happ a lot to lead off and have Kyle Tucker hit behind you. Absolutely. So that could play really well in Happ's favor this year. He could score a lot of runs. And actually, like, if I were a betting man, I'd probably bet that Happ explodes past his career high runs. His career high in run total last year at 89. I'll bet he gets 100. I would not be shocked. If Happ plays a full season, he's going to score 100 runs. I take that to the bank. So that's pretty valuable to have, too.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I love Ian Happ. Always have, always will. So an ADP, I think you said 140 range. Yeah, he's right there. ADP right now. I looked at just NFBC draft champion drafts over the last 30 days, 134. So right in that range. Again, he's the outfield 30. So yeah. I mean, PCA is ahead of him. Long-term, I get it, PCA is, 6 years younger, 7 years younger, whatever it is, but I'd rather have Ian Happ right now than Pete Crow Armstrong. All right, moving on, though, away from Ian Happ, even though I could talk to Ian Happ for another 5-10 minutes. Last kind of little segment here of this show, a handful of younger upside guys, you know, former top prospects that, you know, the last, you know, few years just haven't gone their way for one reason or another, or multiple reasons. Then one's a little older here, but Evan Carter, Nolan Jones, Joe Adell, Jordan Walker. I mean, there's been a lot of hype on these guys at one point or another. Not so much now, but, you know, kind of, you know, post-hype. Is that, you know, worth looking into here, worth looking to buy these guys? I mean, I think someone asked about Evan Carter, I think, on one of your posts, Chris. That's what gave me the kind of thought to do a little segment like this and throw a couple other names in here. Because Evan Carter was one of the, you know, top prospects in baseball, had that great debut with Texas in 2023, including the postseason run to the World Series. But now 2024 was basically a lost year for him. 162 player appearances, has the back issues, which are really concerning. You know, obviously Jordan Walker has underwhelmed, been, you know, taxis back from AAA to the majors, back to AAA, back to the majors, but obviously still has the power upside there. You know, and, you know, Joe Adell, I mean, we've talked Joe Adell so many times over the years, but turn to the show, at least a little bit of progress, you know, as the year went on last year, as best year. So maybe there's a little bit of, you know, hype there again, or a little bit of a buying window if you want to. And then Nolan Jones obviously had the nice 2023, went 2020 in, what was it, like 400 and something play appearances. Let me pull him up right here. Yeah, 2020 and 424 play appearances, but was absolutely terrible last year. So do we believe in 2023? I mean, I'll give you, you know, go wherever you want with these four. Obviously, I think Carter is the most intriguing name here, which we can maybe lead with him. But kind of any of these guys, are you still looking to buy low on these guys, or who are you out on? You know, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so it's a tough list. I mean, Evan Carter, all the talent in the world, power, speed, OBP skills, but a back injury. And like, you look at the kind of injuries he's had, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned, to be honest with you. I hope that he comes back healthy, but look at the talent that back injuries have derailed. Like Brennan Davis, he was a top 10 prospect, and now, you know, I mean, he was DFA'd by the Cubs. Back injuries totally derailed his career. You know, how's it going to affect Evan Carter? I don't know. The latest news was he's been swinging a bat and he's expected to be 100% for spring training, but could it flare up again? And that's kind of my fear with Carter. Nolan Jones, I was just completely out on him. I was a complete sell high camp after 2023. He had one of the worst end zone contact rates of any hitter in Major League Baseball, despite the good season. And I know he dealt with injuries last year. He actually saw a decent jump in the contact rates. So maybe it's a decent time to buy Nolan Jones. Yeah, you have to obviously factor in the standpoint that he's going to play in Coors, he's going to have splits, but I at least look at it and say, okay, Nolan Jones made a few strides in some areas where he made more contact. He saw the end zone contact rate jump by 8 percentage points. That's pretty notable. I am kind of into Joe Adell, which I hate. I don't want to be into Joe Adell, but he's another one where he's made improvements with contact. And you put a caveat or an asterisk by that because the contact's still really bad. But he's another one where you saw the end zone contact rate jump by 6 percentage points up to 79%. You saw the overall contact rate for Joe Adell. It jumped by 10 percentage points. It was above 70%. That's a huge win for Joe Adell. He chased less. He made way better quality of contact. He barreled the ball up at a 12% rate. That was 80th percentile among all hitters. And he had a 45% hard hit rate. Joe Adell's going to give you power. He's going to give you speed. I mean, there's certainly a batting average bottom out here that you have to think about. But Adell's interesting. And Jordan Walker, who might be the hardest player for me to really get a grasp on who he is. I think this about Walker. I think the minute they pull him out of the outfield and say, you're just going to DH, I think it benefits Jordan Walker a lot. No denying his bat. I think his bats are really good. I think the pressure of playing in a position that he's not comfortable at all has affected him. And you look at the numbers since the move to the outfield, they haven't been good at all. And I think that certainly, we get so caught up in all the data points, but I think the aspects that we can't quantify, like the mental aspect of a player, is a big deal. And for Walker, that may have been the first time he's truly been challenged. He's not an outfielder. He's just not. But they threw him out there to get his bat in the lineup, and I think the pressure of playing the outfield spot really hurt the bat. Walker ended the year pretty strong, actually. He had a good September when he came back, and I think he hit 5 home runs in the final month, if I'm not mistaken. Off the top of my head, I was pulling it up, but I thought he finished the year good, which was a positive for him moving forward. Yeah, I mean, he had a 780 OPS in September, which, I mean, okay, like, that's much improved. He hit 253 and had a 494 slug. So, positive step in the right direction, at least for Jordan Walker. But my hope is they just say, you're playing first base or you're DHing. Kind of sucks for fantasy value to DH only, but I think the bat will be much better because of it.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree there. You know, I think we often forget about, you know, when some of these changes happen for a player who's so used to a certain spot. I mean, it's also good to have versatility, but, you know, it can really kind of not mess with the player, but kind of maybe set them back a little bit. You know, I always think back to Xander Bogaerts, and you know, back when he was kind of forced over to third base early in his career because of Steven Drew, it ended up working out, obviously, but he kind of set back just a little bit, but then he found his footing and went back to shortstop and had a good career with Boston before going out west. But, you know, with Walker, I guess I'll start with him. St. Louis has basically said that, they're kind of rebuilding, retooling, whatever. They have zero reason to not play him just regularly, unless he absolutely stinks up the joint in Busch Stadium. He has no reason to not be in that lineup every day to start the year. I mean, it looks like he's going to be probably still out in the outfield from the looks of it in right field. But, you know, I want to see I don't want them just jerking him around, you know, put him in AAA again. Like, give him an extended period and let's see what he can do. He's still only 22 years old, which is, I'm pulling my prospect rankings here. I mean, I'm just looking at my top, like, 10, how many he's younger than. Okay, it's only one, or no, two. But he's right. He's younger than Kobe Mayo. He's, you know, only a couple months older than Dylan Cruz. You know, he's younger than Chase DeLauder. He's younger than Matt Shaw. Still, so this is still a very young ball player. We kind of tend to forget that because he's been up in the majors for a couple of years now and had struggles. But he's still very young. You know, do I have as high of expectations for him now as I did, you know, 18 months ago? No. But I think he could still be a good fantasy player. So, you know, like on a scale 1 to 10, you know, 10 being, you know, incredibly strong buy, I'd say he's a 6.5 to 7 right now. Nolan Jones, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd be okay because in buying, I'm not like rushing out to do so. But given just how far the perceived value has fallen on him, I mean, it's dirt cheap. If it doesn't work out, you didn't give up a lot to get him, so I don't think you'll be too mad about it. And if it does come back to him being something, hey, yeah, you got him for cheap, or you got him for free. Maybe you pick him up because he's been dropping your league or whatever. But yeah, obviously, you know, he was everyone's favorite sell high, you know, coming into last year. I don't think even, you know, anybody could think that it would go this poorly for him. But I mean, there's still, you know, still good power there. You know, there's still solid speed as well. So can he get back to, you know, maybe flirting with 2020 over a full year? I mean, I won't rule it out. You know, maybe more of a long shot, but I won't rule it out. Obviously, you got Coors Field, 26 years old. I think there's still something here, but Evan Carter, I'm very concerned. I mean, talent-wise, I feel the best about him long-term out of these four. But I've said it time and time again on this podcast, I am scared away by back issues. Hitters and pitchers, I think especially hitters a little bit more than pitchers because it's all the torque in the middle part of the body when you're swinging a bat. And if something doesn't feel right there, I mean, we've all played, you know, I played baseball, I'm obviously not higher than a high school level, but, you know, when something's off, I mean, like basketball, football, you can tend to like power through those a little bit more. But baseball, like, you got to, you know, your back's feeling a little sore. I can completely throw you off, and you're going to have a terrible stretch until that back's feeling well again. So if he's already having these, you know, notable back issues at age 22, how does that progress? How does that age as he ages? So, I mean, I love the player with Evan Carter. I mean, he's shown power, speed, approach. We've all seen that, you know, throughout his minor league career and a little bit in the majors as well. But I'm just so concerned by the back issues. So I'm not like out on Gavin Carter, but I'm also, I don't know if I'd be like going out to try to buy low right now, but definitely has the appeal of a buy low for sure. If you're not worried about the back issues, I could absolutely see buying low. Joe Adell, I think he's at least something now. I mean, is he going to be ever live up to the upside of what we kind of throw upon him as a top prospect handful of years back? No, I think that's safe to say he's never going to live up to being like a, the star level player, but he's still very strong. He's still very fast. So like, I think I was looking, weeks ago, like for a guy, I think there was only him and like a handful of others that had the 85th percentile for bat speed and sprint speed. He is 90th percentile bat speed, 86th percentile sprint speed. Obviously the K rate, is still high, but he came down to 28%. That's, it's high. It's not good, but it's manageable these days. That's not like as terrible of a mark as it used to be. Walk rate was a career best mark as well. Still below average, but near 8%. As you mentioned, Chris, the zone and overall contact rates jumped up again, still below average, but you can kind of see a path to value here and maybe being like that super streaky, but end of the year, maybe he goes 25-20 next year. Average probably, I wouldn't even put him higher than like 230, but if he can get 220, 230 with 25-20, I mean, that's still some value right there. So I can see the allure in buying all these guys. I think the strongest buy is, what would be, if you could go out and buy one right now, Chris, at what you think their cost is, like who would be like the first one you'd go to? I mean, but it's probably Evan Carter, but maybe a little Jordan Walker too. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Jordan Walker, people are just so soured on it. As you mentioned, he is 22 years old, so he still has plenty of time ahead of him to be a good bat. So I think that at perceived value cost, it's probably Walker.
Yeah.
Carter, man, I'm scared.
Yeah,
I think we've like put a big emphasis on that back injury, and it's true. Like I have no idea what to expect. I wish I had better insight, but I don't know. So with that, I'd probably take the shot on Jordan Walker of any of these four.
I mean, look what we talked about, back issues with Mike Trout. I mean, they're yep. very, they can really derail a career. So hopefully it doesn't do that to Carter. He's a fun young player, but yeah, I think I would lean Walker, then Carter, then Adell, and then Nolan Jones last for me. And Joe Adell is still 25 as well. He's been around forever. He was a high school draftee back in 2017. So he's been, this will be like his ninth year in professional baseball in the Angels organization. So yeah, he's still pretty young as well. It's we got to keep that in mind. We think they've been around forever, that they're older than they are, but these guys are still pretty young ball players. But that's going to wrap us up though. Really fun position. We probably could have done another few episodes because the outfield is obviously insanely deep, but the episode 363 was prospects with Chris Welsh. 364 was part one of this, rankings 1 through 20, and then this one 21 through 50. That wraps up outfield, and now we're on to pitcher next week. We got two really exciting guests lined up for the Dynasty episodes that we're really looking forward to, and we'll see you all again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.